At the top of our program, already there are plans for 3 investigations of Flint's water crisis, a gubernatorial task force, an EPA inquiry, and one by the state auditor. Our next guest wants another. Senate Minority Leader Jim Ananick of Flint says the 3 planned investigations amount to agencies investigating themselves. He's proposing a formal Senate hearing, which would have the authority to subpoena witnesses to testify under oath. To learn about the response so far to his proposal and about other issues, we welcome back Democratic Senator Jim Ananick of Flint. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Talk to us about the response to your proposal so far. What are you hearing?
You know, I sent the formal letter on Thursday, and I'm looking forward to a response, formally from the Majority Leader in the next coming days. I think a lot of the senators on both sides of the aisle understand the importance of taking a deep dive into the DEQ in general, but looking back about what happened, and you really can't move forward until you know what happened, why it happened, and the mistakes that were made. And initially, I called for an independent investigation, and if the governor would have put one of those forward, I would be less likely to be calling for these legislative hearings. But you know, a task force that basically looks forward, that has no subpoena power, no one on the task force with any investigative background. You know, nothing against those individuals. I think making recommendations for policy, they may be good at that. But looking back and taking a deep dive into what happened in a real transparent way, I have not seen that so far, and I'm still hopeful, but I'm not expecting a real deep dive looking back. So I think someone needs to do that.
And the subpoena power is important in your view. Is that the critical piece here?
No question about it. I mean, when you have folks who've lied for 18 months at all different levels, from the emergency manager department to folks at the DEQ, continuing to lie up until this day, I think it's important to put people under oath because, you know, they can choose to lie under oath, but if they're proven to be lying, you can hold them accountable. Where now, it's just another politician or bureaucrat lying, and nobody, you know, everyone expects that. But if you put them under oath, you can, compel them to tell the truth.
Senator Meekhoff, your Republican cohort, the majority leader of the state Senate, expressed confidence in DEQ Director Dan Wyant last week. He said, quote, "I have very high marks for Director Wyant. Quote, I believe they will find solutions and find the things that need to be corrected," apparently referring to Governor Snyder's task force there. Do you need Senator Meekhoff's blessing on this to proceed?
Oh, there's no question. Yeah, I mean, this would have to be done through the formal committee process. So, you know, the Republicans are going to have to decide that transparency and looking back. You know, we just sent $9.35 million back to Flint to solve a problem that never should happen in the first place. You know, from a taxpayer standpoint, I would expect that. I mean, to me, if I, you know, almost $10 million was spent on a problem that was caused almost solely by either emergency managers or by failure for oversight from the DEQ, I think it's important to get to the bottom of that. And I think one of the ways to do that is through subpoena power. And I think it can be done in a very fair and independent way through the legislative process if we do it right. But, you know, I think it's important to have as much transparency as possible.
Should the governor fire Dan Wyant, or should he be considering firing Dan Wyant?
Well, I think if you do a thorough investigation and I don't think you should go into any investigation with 4, predetermined conclusions. I think you need to have an investigation, ask the tough questions, look at all the documents, and then determine who should be fired and if anybody, who should be and how many after the investigation. I think if you go in with a head already on the platter, you're not really being independent. So, you know, I think the DEQ has some serious problems, and there's some cultural problems that need to be addressed. I don't necessarily blame the director for that. I think that we need to have a thorough investigation and see what went wrong and who knew and when.
Who is most responsible for this problem, given what we know now?
Well, I think,
or do we not know enough now? Is that your point?
Well, I think we don't know enough about in the oversight world, like when they knew, why they didn't come forward, when they did have information, why they chose to hide it. When it comes to the decisions that were made, I think we know that. And we know that it was emergency managers, and we know it started off with the Brown-Kurtz emergency manager, and then it was implemented by Darnell Early, who probably is the most culpable in this because, you know, he made the switch happen and cut off ties to Detroit. And then even the last emergency manager, Jerry Ambrose, when the local government, when the city council voted to go back to Detroit, You know, he didn't just say no. He ridiculed the decision. And obviously, if they went back months ago, this problem never would have happened. So a lot of culpability lies in the emergency managers and also in the system of emergency manager. It basically allowed for cost-benefit analysis of poisoning kids versus saving money, and that should never happen.
Darnell Early, who was the EM at the time of the switch to Flint River Water took place, defended himself here on this program last week, insisting that he had no reason to revisit a decision that officials there made prior to his arrival. Let's listen to a little bit of what he said, and then I'll get your response.
Yeah.
The plan included all of those elements when I got there in October. There were two emergency managers who oversaw that switch from the DWSD until I got there and obviously saw the final implementation of the switch. But I don't go into a situation and just arbitrarily start changing what's already in place. I work with the staff and with the elected officials to the extent that they're willing to work with an emergency manager to keep moving forward with what they have in place.
So the point he seems to be making is if decisions are made, then emergency managers change. Should the new EM go back and revisit everything that came before him? Are you advocating that?
Well, one of the first things I think it's important to acknowledge is that he continues to change his story. Initially, he said it was the local government, the elected officials who made that decision. Now, he's finally acknowledging it was his predecessors. So I think that's important to show the sort of pattern of lies that he's willing to sort of spew. And here's another one example. I mean, emergency, he came in, I can tell you, in his tenure, if you try to turn on a light switch in the city hall, if an employee or an elected official tried to do that, they had to jump through 10 hoops. So to say that, well, I didn't go back and look decisions, well, what are you there for then? The whole point of an emergency manager is to right the ship, whether that's financial, whether that's programs. And he came in and said, well, you know, all the failures before me weren't my fault. I mean, the implementation of cutting off to Detroit was a decision he made. We have documentation of that he was the one who cut off ties to Detroit. So the idea that, it was the guy before me, it's another example of passing the buck. And the unfortunate part is, in essence, he got a promotion to go to Detroit to screw up that system. So for me, you know, he failed when he was a city administrator at Saginaw. You know, he's clearly failed because he poisoned people in Flint. And now he's down trying to turn around a system where educating 45,000 students. And to me, it's just unconscionable that a guy like that would have any say over human beings. I mean, he should continue to move south and go down to Ohio and screw things up down there because, you know, he's done enough damage in Michigan.
Senator Meekhoff also commented to the Free Press last week that he feels the other investigations ought to wrap up before the Senate embarks on another. Now, judging by your comments, the Senate really should go first. Why is that?
Well, I mean, I think a thorough investigation needs to happen. If people are willing to have an investigation after the other ones wrap up, I mean, I just want to make sure that we get to the bottom of what happened. And I don't want to give people time to sort of cover their tracks because we've seen folks within the DEQ and the Drinking Water Division, folks at the local level, have continuing to still make mistakes and to sort of deny that they were involved, and even when they get caught, they do the best they can to cover up what they did. I don't want to give them time to sort of paper over what they did. But at the same time, if folks want to get the other investigations over with first, it's not the way I would do it, but I understand that rationale. So as long as we get to a thorough look back and it's done in a timely fashion, I think the public has a right to expect it done, you know, relatively soon. I'm fine with that. I just want to make sure that, you know, when we spend $10 million, and really as a body, whenever we spend any large amounts of money, especially for a problem that should never have happened, we should demand accountability. That's one of our important roles as a Senate. I mean, it's a big function of a check and balance is to have accountability over the executive branch. It doesn't mean that you assume they've done something wrong, but it means we're fully implementing all the powers that are given to us. And I think the public expects accountability, and we should help give it to them.
It seems like what you're saying also, though, Senator Ananick, is that with the Senate subpoena power and having witnesses testify under oath, a Senate investigation could learn things that the other investigations may not get to. Why not have the more comprehensive investigation out of the chute? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's the rationale I had. I mean, I initially recommended that the governor appoint an independent commission. I suggested, it didn't have to be him, but I suggested former Senator Carl Levin because of his years of chairing the government oversight committee. You know, they got the Levin Center at Wayne State, which is a one of the first of its kind to have a governmental oversight center training people how to into that business. You know, I think we could have really done it in an independent way. He's not in elective office anymore. He's got no bones to pick with anybody. Respected on both sides of the aisle. And I thought he could have been a great chair of a commission like that. Now, when they decided not to do that and basically just look forward, which is basically what that task force is doing, I think they're going to look back a little bit, but their main charge was to make policy recommendations going forward. The Auditor General was a suggestion that I made. They were already going to be looking at the Drinking Water Division. I asked them to expand the scope a little bit. And then the EPA, who's obviously got some culpability too because of some of the failures they had, it makes sense to me to have the thorough investigation first, but they've already started the other investigation, so I understand the rationale that get those out of the way, use the information in those to help build on a thorough investigation. As long as that happens, I think it's going to be okay. But I think it makes more sense to do a really comprehensive investigation in the beginning, and we didn't but that's not the direction that they seem to want to go.
Incidents smaller than this have certainly led to lawsuits. I am not aware, I have not heard of any legal action anyone is considering. Are you aware of any legal action anyone is considering?
No one has specifically told me one way or the other, so I'm not aware of that happening.
Okay.
Whether it will or not in the future, I can't really speak to that.
I want to ask you about a story that broke yesterday. The nonprofit Center for Public Integrity says Michigan has the worst standards among the 50 states regarding ethics and open government. Have you had time to digest this and what it may mean?
You know, unfortunately, we've been, worst or second to worst for a couple years now. So I haven't fully digested the report for this year. But I do know in past years it's in large part because of, and we got worse because we opened up the money. We doubled the campaign finance donations that are allowed. Dark money is flowing through the state in almost every election. There's no personal financial disclosure. There's so many other problems that really leave causes confidence problems in the citizens. That's why there's so much distrust, because they know that folks are voting on things that they can profit from. And it's really, I personally disclosed my personal finances this year during Sunshine Week to show, it wasn't that hard. And, to me, I think it's all elected officials should do it, because people have a right to know if you're voting on things or profiting on things that you're participating in. And it's, to me, the public, when you put your hand up and swear an oath, you're taking on extra responsibility, and extra transparency should come with that.
Let's spend the time we have left here on the road package. You've referred to the road funding measure that just passed as a sham that, quote, won't fix our roads, unquote. Why won't it eventually, anyway, fix our roads?
Well, every month we wait to fix our roads, the roads get marketably worse. So, it was a $1.2 billion problem when the governor took office in 2011, and due to inaction, the problem's growing and growing. So the problem with waiting so long and pushing things forward into the future and then cutting other taxes at the same time is what you're basically doing is, by the time you get to 1.2, if you ever get there, because when you have $600 million in cuts pushed on to the future legislatures, which is irresponsible in the first place, what makes someone think that a future appropriator is going to say, we should make university tuition more expensive, we should gut police and fire, we should make cuts to K-12 education, because that's really the only places you can make cuts. What makes you think they're actually going to do it in the first place? And the longer you push out the spending, the worse the roads get. So by the time we have the money fully implemented, all the reports, if you look at any report, independent or otherwise, even the Department of Transportation's report suggests that you won't even be able to keep the roads in the condition they're in. If it's a good road, it'll go to fair. If it's a fair road, it'll go to poor. And we'll have no, really good roads. So there's basically a system of poor, fair, good, and excellent. We almost have no excellent roads left. We have a number of good ones, and then those good roads are going to get worse. So the unfortunate part is we're raising people's taxes. We're increasing the birthday tax, the registration, as they call it, but they're phasing it in over this long period of time.
Okay.
That you're going to actually pay more and have worse roads. So it's really a big problem.
Democratic Senator Jim Ananick of Flint is the Senate Minority Leader. Thanks for joining us, Senator.
Thanks
Stay
a lot,
in
Mark.
Touch.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.